This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
If there's nuance, it doesn't mean that there's a one right answer and a one wrong answer.
Welcome to another episode in our special series here on A Productive Conversation called PM Talks, where myself, yours truly, Mike Vardy, and Patrick Roan, my really good friend, dive into conversation, subject matter, things that I don't really necessarily get to talk about with some of my other regular guests. This time, we kind of take a deep dive into the importance of nuance and creativity and communication and decision-making, why we think embracing nuance can lead to a more positive outlook. We compare it to absolutist thinking. We dive more into Rick Rubin's book, The Creative Act, and how it encourages one to think of art as evolving and maybe to take that approach as well. So many more good nuggets. I mean, I'm so glad that we started this series. I hope you are getting a lot out of it. If you haven't listened to previous episodes, please subscribe to the podcast. That way you can check out all of our previous episodes. But let's get to this one. Here is the latest set of PM Talks here on A Productive Conversation. Enjoy. All right. Well, you've got water. I got coffee. So far this series, people were pretty happy about. Like, I've had a couple of people say, love it when, like, what was one of the comments I got on Twitter about our conversations? And it was related literally from the first episode. It was something along the lines of the Simpleton comment that we were talking about. Why in the world is Simpleton, why do we call simple, like, when we talk about simplification? Yeah. Where is it? I'm looking right now. Philip Hinds, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. It's H-I-N-D-S. He's right. Great to hear Patrick Roan again. My takeaway, simple is not equal to stupid, perhaps the very opposite. So where did the word simpleton come from? I brought up. I know I brought that part up. And I'm like, yeah, it's true. Like, why? What? Like, shouldn't a simpleton be like, it could be a badge of honor in some respects, right?
Yeah. You know, but then on the other hand, you know, as a writer, I'm someone who you know, believes in the craft, the art of writing, you know, something I really strongly believe about language and is important about language is that it changes and evolves and grows. And one thing being used one way can become another thing being used another way.
Right.
So while we should maybe call the question, like, why is that happening, or why is that different than it used to be, or how did this thing morph into that thing? Mm-hmm. We also need to accept that that's the way that language works. And that maybe that's where we are Whether or not we should be there is a completely different question. But at the end of the day, it's a question that's moot.
Yeah, because language change, like, it's so funny because, like, we even know what inbox zero was meant when Merlin coined the phrase. Like,
yes.
And it is not that now.
Well, no. And when you hear it, you don't think of it in that way, right?
You don't think of it. Yeah. I mean, when I hear the term inbox zero, it ticks me off because of what it's become. But I think about what it's become, not what it was, first and foremost, like to your point, yeah. Right? And I think, I wonder if this is going to dovetail nicely into our conversation about Rick Rubin and the way the creative act. Wonder if...
Dude, I had the book. I meant to bring it up here with me. And
you can grab it in a minute. Did I? Like, it's fine. Yeah, no, you didn't bring it. That's fine. Your notebooks are all over the place. Remember, you've got like seven planners that are not filled. And Patrick Roan, maximalist. No, I didn't. That's not. Like behind the... No, but the thing is that I wonder if Merlin's explanation, because it was more rooted in thoughtfulness and... it was more strategic, and like, it's hard to explain what inbox zero really meant to somebody, right? You know what I mean? Like, but if you were to say it means you get your email inbox to zero, that's easier to explain. Like, that's like, oh, inbox zero means I have no emails in my inbox, which is not the goal of what inbox zero is meant to be, especially right. When you're trying to do things like craft or make art or do deeper work. If you're on a perpetual quest to get your email to zero, it's you against everybody that could possibly have your email address. God. Right.
Yeah. No,
but you can't say that, like, Merlin's explanation and his definition, while sound, clearly was more complex than the, oh, so just get my email to zero.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the problem, of course, becomes that, you know, words mean things.
Yep.
Right. Another excellent and timely topical example of this. And I'm just going to say right now that I have a whole post about this on my blog that you're welcome to read, but I do not argue about politics on the internet, period. Yeah. End of story. But this just happens to make a good example. The defund the police movement here in the U.S. The folks out there decrying, you know, we've got to defund the police. Da, yep. da, da. When in reality, what they meant was, no, we need to make sure that the police are doing the job that they are best suited and able to do, and redirect some of the money that we are paying for that service in our communities to pay for other people, other agencies responding to the things that the police are not both able or good at responding to.
Yeah.
But how do you fit that all on a two-word rally plot?
You can't. And the problem is absolutism loves brevity.
Oh, my gosh. It does it ever.
It totally does. When you think about, right? Like, if I was to go and look at this from the vantage point of, and I've talked about this before. I've talked about this with David Sparks before, too. The idea of, when Obi-Wan in the Revenge of the Sith says only a Sith deals in absolutes. I'm like, well, wait a minute, though, because the Jedi Order, like as it was created in episode, like in the prequels, as they are now known, they were pretty absolute about a lot of their things.
About their things. And it's pretty much what led to, say, the slaughter of the Jedi Temple and the rise of Darth Vader. And
right. But the argument could be, and so this is where it gets really nerdy, is that the argument is, well, when they decided not to go with, you know, what they were supposed to, and they allowed Anakin to train even though he was too young, are too old, rather, that breaking that rule, they would argue, well, that's what led to the Empire. Because we deviated from that rule, it led to that. But if anything, I would think that exposed the fact is that it exposed the the problems of being so righteous about a very specific thing. And that's why Qui-Gon Jinn's my favorite Jedi, because he was kind of like one that was like, well, I don't listen to the, quote, the Jedi Council. And I certainly don't listen to the, I listen to the way of the Force. I'm listening to the Force. I'm listening to what, and to me, he was the, and there's been plenty of stories on YouTube and elsewhere that says that, you know, in Star Wars geeks, you know, for lack of a better term, and I am one, will say that Qui-Gon was the Jedi that the Emperor feared more than anybody else, because he didn't follow those rules that the Jedi Council wanted him to. Mm-hmm. And that was the one that he's like, I want this one out of the way, you know, like get him out of the way and we'll be good, because Obi-Wan and all the other ones will toe the, they'll do what I predict them to do. This other guy, he goes off script. I don't like that. And that's, I think the problem is that when you say, like, I think as you're talking about this, there are bad actors everywhere, in every arena, whether you look at it from, you know, a sports arena, a political, or like whatever, there are bad actors. And what I mean by that is, of course, there's always going to be somebody that is going to look to circumvent what's going on, either intentionally or just incidentally.
I always go back to the quote from the Christopher Nolan's Dark Knight with Michael Caine, right? Mm-hmm. It's, you know, some men don't respond to money or goods or whatever. They just want to watch the world burn, right?
Yep.
There are those people.
There are. And I think the thing is the more that we lean into, which is why I really like Rick Rubin's book, and I'm still not done it yet. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But what I like about the intersection of art and commerce, the one of the things I like is that there is no really right or wrong, despite the fact that there is such a desire to make something right or wrong, you know, from the business side of things, right?
Well, with art, it's a desire to
express,
but also to invite a reaction.
Sure.
Right. One of the quotes I use or things I say to my wife is something we came up with in our discussions about art and what we love about it is art always does its job.
Yeah.
Now, it may not be the job that you want. It may not be the job that you expect. It may not be a job that you understand. It may not even be a job that you like, but that doesn't mean that art's not doing its job.
Right. Well, you've seen
art always does its job.
You've seen that art exhibit where it's the brick that's being built, and then there's a book in the bottom of it, and it throws the entire brick wall off. And I think it's about that idea of disruption, like knowledge can be a disrupting force, right?
Yes.
And like, that's the message, right? Right. And I remember going to an art gallery in Montreal 2 years ago when Nick Cave, who admittedly, his music is an acquired taste. I don't know if you've listened to Nick Cave in the Bad Seeds before.
I have. Yeah.
It's an acquired taste, but his music has been covered by like Johnny Cash.
Oh, and
others.
My gosh.
Like, Ruben interviewed him. We'll link it in the show notes. There's an interview on Rick Rubin's podcast with Nick Cave, and it's fast. Like, it's just a really good, deep conversation about art. And it's, but I remember going into this. This is an example of business and art kind of clashing, I think. So I'm in this Montreal for this conference that I'm attending, and I'm actually speaking on I'm moderating a panel. So I'm not even speaking, I'm moderating it, which can be challenging in a completely different way, because I'm corralling people who, you know, have had limited time to interact with one another. So I mean, it's not like I'm against moderating a panel, and I've done it before, but it's not like I can just go up and be asked questions. I actually have to do some preparation and make it work. So the day that we are going, I think it's like earlier in the day, and I decide to buy tickets to Nick Cave's gallery show that was, I think it was making its debut in Montreal, or its only Canadian stop in Montreal. I'm like, I want to go see this because I'm in Montreal. It's April. I'm going to go. And I walk, and I remember, I loved it, by the way. It was very small, discreet, but it had like things like, weirdly enough, like he kept like Nina Simone's chewing gum. Like he had that. you know, that he put on display with like a story about Nina Simone and stuff like that. And there was like his, he kept like, speaking of maximalism, there's a lot of stuff he kept that is like, wow. Right. And his entire office is replicated in this museum display. I think it's still touring. So if you have a chance to go see it, you can actually like use his piano. He encouraged it. I remember sitting in the space, and that one of the museum employees, like, I'm just sitting at the desk and they go, have you like touched anything? I'm like, oh no, no. They're like, no. He wants you to interact with the space. Mm-hmm. Like he wants you to, you know, and I'm like, really? And I, by the way, it was like a Wednesday after, like no one was there. It was just me. Like there was nobody else, which made it even better because I got to freely walk and not, but the reason I bring it up is I remember when I got back to the venue, and one of the organizers were like, so what'd you do? I'm like, oh, I went to an art gallery. And the look on their face was, it wasn't like incredulous, but it was like, really? Like, it was very much like, but you're here at this like, thing for choice. Business. Why did you go? And there is something about what art does. Mm. And I think what creative work does is it gives you space. Mm. It does. I believe like, and what you do with that space can be informed by the art, or it can be as a result of what the art kind of did, right? Or, mm-hmm. you know, when you're, because I mean, again, being in that gallery, it was just me immersed with whatever was going on, and every bit of art is different. Watching a Taylor Swift concert, you know, like checking that out, like listening to as we're recording this, like the day after Tracy Chapman and Luke Combs, I think it was Luke Combs, did the duet
on the Grammy. Yeah.
Which
she sounded fantastic. And he was barely struggling to hang on, but he was
struggling to hang on because he was so enamored. Like I could see the look on his face.
So enamored. And she was so great.
Yeah.
I mean, she sounded even better than she did.
Well, and she looks great. Yeah.
Full disclosure.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Something you should know.
Yeah.
Classmate of my wife's in college.
Mm-hmm.
She went to college with my wife. My wife knew her.
She
got her record deal from, it just so happened that another guy they went to college with.
Right.
His dad was a major producer with, I think, RCA or
you so know. That so Tracy Chapman went to school with.
She went to Tufts. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Okay.
And played in the coffee shops around Tufts in Boston, and you know, was in at least a couple of classes with my wife. I mean, they graduated in the same class. I mean, mm-hmm. they were in the same class in college and whatnot. And so my wife kind of, you know, knows Tracy. They're not like, oh, I can call you on the phone and we're buzz or whatever, but they're
right.
We're fellow alums, and they went to school together at a relatively small private liberal arts school.
That's fascinating.
My wife knows a lot of favorites.
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today.
I was just talking with someone today about, how my wife knows Kevin Bacon.
Really?
Yes.
So you are literally 1 degree away from Kevin Bacon. I am
literally 1 degree away from Kevin Bacon. And not just like
not in movies, like, but like in real life.
Met him and like shook his hand and snap a selfie or something. Mm-hmm. But spent a fair bit of time with him. Long story short, she used to be the managing producer for a venue here in town, and the Bacon brothers played there, but she was in charge of all the green room setup and transportation and everything else. And so she didn't have anyone to pick him up at the airport and didn't want to have to pay for the taxi or the limo or whatever. So she just went and picked him and his brother up in the airport, and they chatted and she got him set up at the place and hung around for sound check, got them any lunch that they needed, the whole 9 yards. She's like spent the day with them.
That's hilarious. By the way, having worked in college radio, and I would go to the June, like there's, I've had a chance to hang out with a few people that mainly in the Canadian music scene, but elsewhere too. And it is, there's something about just, and again, where I live too, we get a lot of people in Victoria that come. It's a popular tourist destination. So there's occasionally like actors that will come here, especially if they're filming in Vancouver, they'll come over here for the day. There is something about once you've had that experience of just being around someone like Kris Kristofferson, when I worked at the film festival, we sat around in the film festival office and just drank beer, like a bunch of us with Kris Kristofferson. Yeah. And it was just like, and he was just so cool and so relaxed. And I think that the key is, and I think we're at an age now where we getting wowed to the degree of like fanboying at a level, it doesn't happen to the same degree. It's more of a respect than a fan thing. Right.
Exactly. And it happens in a weird way, right? The things that people we fanboy are completely different than like, they're not, back in the day, I would have fanboyed Merlin.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah. Well, I remember, even David and stuff. Like, there are people who, I was watching Casey Neistat do his video about the Vision Pro, the new Apple product, which I know you bought. But yours just has a blinking cursor, though, I think, right? On the screen.
It's literally just text edit.
That's exactly.
Just text edit.
I don't want my files to be trapped in this goggle.
Plain text, baby.
Yeah, there was you and Chris Bailey. I should just get you two in a room talking about Simple Note and that. But nonetheless, so I was watching the video and a couple of guys came out of there. He was in Times Square walking around with Vision Pro on. And you know, Case, I mean, what this is an example of art and commerce colliding in a great way, because he's making the film on his terms, the way he would make it, but it's still a review of the Vision Pro. And the best line from the whole thing is, this is the worst Vision Pro that Apple will ever make.
Yes.
Right? Yeah, which is true. Like, but that is a true.
Just like the Gen 1 iPhone was the worst iPhone.
Right. Apple. That is and the reason I bring it up is because these two guys walked out of like a store in Times Square and they saw Casey, and that's who they really wanted to meet in New York City people. And Casey just happened to be there. And so they took pictures and stuff, but that like people fanboy, like I've gone to some of the conferences where they'll fanboy over like Casey or James Clear. Like, I mean,
oh my gosh.
Right. You know, I mean, and the thing is if James and I ran into each other, and if you ran into James too, I mean, you've known James for quite a while. Did you ever get a chance to hang out with James? I don't know if you did. World Domination Summit, Chris Guillebeau's conference we did. Like, I remember going, and I mean, we would, it's not a peer thing. It's not mutual admiration society kind of thing, but you know what I mean? Well, like,
within your own industry, within whatever it is you do, right? You know, they're going to be those people who you admire, right? People who are doing something that that you wish you were doing, or that like really
An energy they give off that you can't.
Exactly. And thank you so much for. I'm such a fan, and this, that, and the other, right?
Like Rick Rubin. Rick Rubin would be somebody that I would love to.
Oh, you know, man.
Like, just sit and chat with.
To sit and chat with Rick Rubin would be a gas. Can you imagine? He's got so many great musician stories, right? I mean, that alone would be worth it. Let's talk about the book. Because here's the thing about the book, and that is that this is a book for people who don't believe that they are creative.
Yeah.
This is not a book for people who not only believe they are creative, know they are creative, and practice that creativity. I'm just saying that I found the book hard to get through, simply because I didn't feel like it was really giving me or telling me anything I didn't already know.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And sure, it's nice to have validation, no question about it. And sure, there's some great stories in there and some great analogies and everything else, and I don't want to stop people. The book is worth reading, but I just want you to understand, those of you who have not read the book and may have some interest in reading the book, that this is not going to open up any doors or light bulb moments that I think, at least they didn't for me, that I didn't already have, right?
See, for me, it was different.
Uh-huh.
For me, it was...
Which is art doing its job, by the
exactly,
way.
Exactly, exactly. Number one, it's not a book you can rush through, period. I don't care whether you're creative or otherwise, because there is a lot of things to ruminate and reflect on, I believe. Yes, there's a lot of stuff that we already know and have heard before, right? And if you've ever seen Rick or heard Rick do an interview, you're going to glean a lot of stuff from that. The nice thing is that there's an uninterrupted vibe to this book that I think you wouldn't get necessarily from an interview. But what I did like is, for me, it was very much a kind of like when you get to like reading, like writing down to the bones, you know, like, like Goldberg's book and stuff like that. Like it's, when you say it's not for did you say it's not for people who already know that they're creative?
I would say that people who already know they're creative, this will be a lot of validation and less information.
I would agree on that front. I also think that it is helpful for somebody who knows they're creative, has had experience creating in the past and are stuck.
Oh, well, that's a whole different thing.
And right.
I would agree with you on that.
Yes, because, and not just necessarily stuck in like, I haven't created in a long time, but stuck in, I'm not giving this the attention it deserves. I'm not that leveling up. There's a piece in here where, you know, and there's a lot of permissiveness that goes on in this book. So not just validation, but like Rick really kind of says, I'm giving you permission to do this because this, yeah. And because it's coming from an authoritative voice, you feel almost compelled that yes, like,
yeah, like, but this is okay.
But I think the interesting thing is that if you're coming to this book for a singular answer, you're not going to get one because it's literally in the title. It's a way of being. Like, there's an evolutionary piece, right?
Right.
You know, there's some, I mean, I dog-eared a bunch of stuff.
A way of being and a way of seeing and a way of, you know, a way of approaching and interacting.
Right.
You know, and the understanding that it's not magic.
No.
I.e., you know, that creativity is, you know, is not some sorcery that some people are born, it's not the Force to bring this back around to the Jedi.
Right.
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 You know, although he might argue, well, no, it kind of is.
But, well, yeah. I mean, I think he would. I think he would say that there's some elements of it like that. But
I guess what I'm saying is, okay, let's make that. Let's go there. Yes, like the Force, this is really about sensing what is already there, what is already present. You know, tapping into that energy that is in everything and flows through us and flows out of us and flows through the things that we see and the touch and the nature and the this, you know, and that creativity is a force that can be tapped into by anyone who is willing to open themselves up to that, right? You know, that the moment that you take an exhale, let go, and start to kind of feel your way through it, that's when you'll get it, right?
You know, I'm going to link to this in the show notes as well, but the interview that Rick Rubin had with Stephen Pressfield is fascinating.
No,
because Rick talks about the Source in the book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a positive thing. Like, you're trying to tap into the Source, whereas Pressfield talks about the resistance. So it's almost like those.
There's a structural tension between them.
Yes. And so it's interesting because I think the war of art is for somebody who is frustrated.
Ooh.
Whereas this book is more for the people who are like, I know that it's more about taking it, kicking it up a notch, digging deeper. Right. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Maybe, you know, tapping into it a little bit deeper.
Because one is about avoiding the resistance, keeping it at bay. The other one is about leaning into the Source. Right. So they're two different approaches in a lot of ways, but the ends are the same. Like, you come out on the other side with something. And it's, to me, one of the things that I found really compelling about Rick's writing is very much, he lives by the credo, the audience comes last. Like, this book is not for everybody at all, because it's not like, when he says the audience comes last, that's something that really resonated with me, because I think when you're thinking about making something, especially when you're in this space of like art and commerce and you're making it for a living, there is a propensity and there's a large pull to make something that people will buy, something commercial, something this, as opposed to doing, like, I remember having a conversation about this idea that I had, which will go under like the Mike Vardy umbrella or whatever. And I remember bringing it to some friends and they were like, the idea of like, better to be clear than clever, which is true. Better to be clear than clever. Like, they like, just be clear about it. Don't be clever in terms of what you want to phrase this thing as. But the artist in me wants to be flipping clever, like, really does, right? Because that's, you know, like, I love, you know, when I was doing comedy, like, one of the my favorite things I ever wrote, and you can still watch it on YouTube, although it plays much better on stage, is this sketch called Jet Parker Action Hero, where it's about this action hero who is supposed to go to, I think, Colombia or somewhere and get, like, free the diplomats. But, and so it's very tense, right? He gets a call. He's wearing like a undershirt, like a sleeveless undershirt, and he's like shaved head. My late friend Greg played him. He was like brilliant on film and even on stage. Yeah. And once he gets off the phone, he pulls out a suitcase and starts packing for the trip. And on film, he takes his time packing, and then he walks off frame. And then the narrator turns, tune in next week for another exciting episode of Jet Parker, Action Hero. So the entire bit is just him. Now, imagine on stage how that played. So I wasn't there because I didn't go to San Francisco when we did it there. But they played it on stage. And the direction I gave, because I wrote and directed the scene, I wasn't in it, was whenever you do this, I mean, you get to decide when you're done packing. Like that's, but you need to be, I go, here's the thing. Mm-hmm. When it gets uncomfortable, stick around a little longer. When it gets even a bit more uncomfortable, you're going to hear titters from the audience. You're going to hear a laugh, especially a more sophisticated audience. Like some are going to be like, what the, did he forget his line? But then they're going to get it. And as they get it, like I get goosebumps even just talking about it right now.
Yeah.
And they finished it and they got roared, like in San Francisco, because they came back told me, roars of applause. And they opened, so my troupe opened for Bruce McCullough of Kids in the Hall. That was one of the things.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And Scott Thompson was in the crowd watching the show.
Awesome.
And the after party, the people that were there, they said that they loved that sketch. They're like, that sketch was just.
Yeah.
And that sketch is completely unconventional. Like it's outside the box and it's clever as all get out, because. Yeah. Who would do, like, you know, you see stuff like that and it's just like, it makes perfect sense that, like, what happens between like that phone call and him getting on a plane and being in the jungle? Well, he has to pack, like, clearly. And comedy is all about
everybody else.
Comedy is about making the extraordinary ordinary, the ordinary extraordinary. That's like the biggest rules of comedy. So to me, when I read Rubin's The Creative Act, all that, like, speaking of validation, I just kept reading going, Yeah. Whereas the resistance, I'm like, like when I'm reading The War of Art, it's more like, you're right, I do need to get past this. Whereas the Creative Act, when I'm reading that, I'm like, yeah, this is the way I am, and this is the way I want to operate.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to keep doing this.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
So let me tell you about one of my favorite art gallery experiences, since we're talking about them.
Sure. And
it actually relates. Mark Mothersbaugh of Devo fame, he's the lead singer, you know, founder, whatever, of the band Devo. He also is a very prolific and talented visual artist. Many people may not know, but Devo actually formed when they were all in art school. They weren't there for music. They were there in art school.
Wow.
And they formed this this band. And he never stopped practicing art. And his last major exposition was called Myopia. After being at MoMA for a while, it toured around. It came here to the Minneapolis Institute of Art. And so I got a chance to see it. And it is really fantastic. Another thing to know about Mark Mothersbaugh is that he really does have myopia. Hence the reason why he wears the glasses, the thick rimmed glasses.
Right.
It's because he's got his lenses are fat thing. You know, they're super thick. Like he needs to know. Because, you know, yeah. And it really kind of explores how that, like how he sees things. So the whole theme of the exhibition mainly was kind of around that. But there were a few other pieces thrown in, pieces he had done that weren't necessarily thematic within the exhibition itself, but had their own merit. And this is one of those. So my daughter, Beatrix, I believe I've told you, but I'm saying this because, well, this is a podcast and not everyone knows me. I think she was about 9 or 10 at the time when we saw this. Actually, she might have been younger. We're walking through the exhibition. She loves art. She especially loves modern art. As when she was a little baby, taking her to museums is not a, you know, is not a irregular thing for us. She absolutely loves them and has thoughts. Beatrix does and always has. So I turned the corner and in kind of a dark corner, but it's, you know, it's well lit from above. Inside of this glass case on top of this pedestal is a giant ice cream cone. The swirl of the cone is red, and the cone itself is brass, this bright brass. And the name of the piece is Ruby Custard. Custard spelled K-U-S-T-U-R-D, by the way.
Okay.
All right. And, you know, Mark's Mother Spa being kind of an art house, very avant-garde, artist. You know, I saw this piece and I thought, wow, this is interesting. I wonder what this is about. Because just on his face, it looked like a big gold and red ice cream cone. I couldn't, and it was out of context. And Beatrix is looking at it too. And so then I started reading the card next to the piece on the wall. And the more I read the card, the more my jaw dropped to the floor. Here's the story. Mark Mothersbaugh made enough money in his work with Devo and other things that he had the opportunity and purchased the world's largest uncut ruby.
Whoa.
Exactly. You see where this is going, right?
Yeah. Keep going.
Wow. So he put this uncut ruby that he purchased for several hundred thousand dollars up on the shelf in his studio and waited for the inspiration to strike.
Right. Wow. At
which point he decided that the best thing he could do with the world's largest uncut ruby was this. And so I'm like, okay, that is the most hell yeah. Punk rock,
yep.
Art doing his job, raw, you go, I get it, this is awesome, this is like the best thing, it's so hilarious, it's so just nuts, right?
Yep.
And like everything, right? And so I'm so excited, I explained it to Beatrix, and I she's looking at me, and as I'm explaining it, she's getting more and more quizzical look. I'm thinking maybe she's not understanding it. But then I get to the end of it. I said, so what do you think? And that's when I understand. No, she got it perfectly. She said, well, that's stupid. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
You get it. Art did its job. Yep.
Yeah.
You know, the point being that kind of stupidity to someone who is kind of tapped into that kind of rebellious avant-garde, Art Nouveau, punk rock ethic is one thing. To the little girl who would have loved to have seen a beautiful jewel, that's another.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
And guess what? It can be both, right?
Yeah, of course it can.
Both of those things. Yep. Just in the same way that this book can help those who are need the validation, need the permission, right? And need need a little bit of like, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Also, could be useful to those who are up against that resistance and need to go to war against it, and that this is going to let them know that it's okay to pick up that weapon and kill it.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that for me,
preaching to the choir.
I don't know, even know if it's that. I suppose, yeah, maybe in a way, but that's, I don't know if that really quite puts the finger on it, but it's worthwhile. Certainly is something that's going to go into my library. It will probably go somewhere close to the Anne Lamott book or the Stephen Pressfield book. It could go somewhere around Cal Newport with the deep work, because I think in a lot of ways it fits there for some reason. I don't know. I can't quite put my finger on why yet, but that's
This fits nicely. If you're going to put it between two of Cal's books, so good they can't ignore you in deep work. In the middle of that.
Yeah.
So now, for those that made it this far in the episode, they're like, oh, and that's when Mike took the photo that went on social media for everyone to see.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Andy Warhol's museum in Pittsburgh?
I have not. I would love to.
It's the largest, from what I recall, the largest art museum in North America dedicated to a single artist. It's like 8 stories or something like that. And speaking of,
he's prolific enough to host such a thing.
And they're like an example of somebody who, made a Burger King commercial about, and that was a form of art, like that commercial. Yeah. It's actually on display in the museum. They actually have it running.
Fits well within his overall work, right?
It does. And I forget who, I want to say it was somebody from the Pixies. Is it Kim or Kelly? It might have been Kim Gordon. That's who it was. It was Kim Gordon. Kim Gordon had an art that, because they normally dedicate like an installation inside. And Kim Gordon from the Pixies had an art display on there as well. And it was, again, very, I think that when you go into any of these environments, like whether it's reading, watching a film, et cetera, there is something about artistry that it's, unfortunately, it's the thing that gets defunded, speaking of. Going back to what we talked about at the beginning, faster than anything else, because it's very hard to quantify. It's incredibly hard to quantify. But it's the thing that kind of, at the end of the day, it separates us in a lot of ways from other forms of life, because to your point, what one piece of art means to you could mean something different to someone else, right? And that that nuance is such a huge part of the human experience and I wonder if, as we get older, this is probably a subject for another time, but nonetheless, if we recognize that nuance is either going to serve us or the ability, it should serve us, but there's some people who get so, and I'm being very general here, that get so stuck in their ways that nuance almost completely disappears. And I wonder if the quality or the fulfillment level of life when that happens is affected, like in a negative way.
Well, I hate to say it, but this kind of also then dovetails into our simplicity discussion from last time, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So here's the deal with nuance. Nuance is complex, right? If there's nuance, it doesn't mean that there's a one right answer and a one wrong answer, right?
Yep.
It means that there's maybe sort of possibly a right answer and maybe sort of possibly a wrong one, but we're not really sure. And the wrong one might actually be the right one. And the right one might actually be quite wrong.
Yep. And it's very individualized, right? Like it might be wrong for you, but might be right for someone else, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And it's very easy to say the person who makes one choice isn't making it for the right reasons, right? And therefore, you can understand it. Or the person making the wrong choice, or making the right choice, might be doing it for the wrong reasons. And nuance is extremely complex, but sadly, it is also a diminishing resource in this world.
Terry Crews talked about that on the Rich Roll podcast. He said the world is losing nuance.
It's really losing nuance and losing it fast. And I think that that's, you know, an extremely both sad and dangerous thing, because we tend to use that lack of nuance to justify things that perhaps we would be better served by looking at it in a more holistic and complete way.
Yeah, nuance doesn't really serve the ego, which is part of the problem too. Because the ego, and that, I think that's part of it, is that, you know, if there is this really, and again, maybe it's because we're exposed to so much. So let's be clear: like we get a lot more information thrown at us these days than we ever have, and we can choose to absorb it or not. But the point is it's being thrust in many different directions.
Sure,
but
yeah,
part of it is an unwillingness to be unsure. You know what I mean? Like, because if it's absolute, if it's black or white, left or right, then it removes conflict in some respect, because you at least find your team with whatever side you're choosing, right? Mm-hmm. Now whether that's right or wrong is inconsequential. Like, that's not what I'm pointing out here. What I'm pointing out is that if you say that, well, I'm not really sure. Yeah, we hear that so much more as parents now. Like, it's okay to say to your kids, like, I don't know. Yeah. And you should. But there is this decreasing, generalized statement that's based on a lot of information that gets thrust at us. But it's almost like if you say that you don't know, then you're stupid. And if you're stupid, then why are you in the position that you're in? Why should we listen to you? It's like, even though that's not what it means, it gets twisted that way.
Well, and I want to go back to what you said about, you know, all of this information coming mm-hmm. our way. Part of the destruction of nuance is because of the deluge,
yeah. right? Yep.
Because of the deluge, we have to, in order to just be able to process, mm-hmm. you know, it forces us to make binary choices.
Yeah, we have right? to delineate. And here's the thing, we have to discriminate. But the problem with the word discriminate, back to words, is that discriminate mm-hmm. sounds negative in and of itself.
It does. But and it can be.
It can be, absolutely.
It also can be.
It's like reluctance. Reluctance can be a very bad thing. It depending yeah. on what you're, but it can also be a very good thing if you're being thoughtful about it. Like, again, there's nuance right there.
well, so real world example of sure. What we're talking about here, about the deluge and how to deal with it, mm-hmm. and why we choose the ways that we do to deal with it. My daughter's passport expired.
Okay.
This was several months ago now. My daughter's passport expired. We were thinking about taking an international trip for spring break, which we have now booked. She got her passport. Everything's great. We only booked it recently because we weren't sure that she was going to get her passport in time. Why? Well, because, and by I say we weren't sure, what I mm-hmm. really mean is Bethany, my wife, was not sure.
Right.
Because everything that she read online, even the what the guy who took our passport application said to us was that, yeah, we're like 3 months behind. Mm-hmm. And so don't expect this anytime soon, yada, 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 yada.
Right.
Because the system's just overwhelmed right now and blah, 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 blah. And so Bethany, you know, being more of a pessimist than I am, and me being the optimist, Bethany was like, well there goes our, we can't go there, I guess. That's mm-hmm. our, and making other plans because we got, I'm like, no, we're going to get her. It's not going to take that long.
Right.
She said, well, he said it was, and you even go to the website and I'm hearing from all my friends that it's taking this long and blah, 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 blah. I said, no, it's not going to take that long. We're going to have her passport in time. No, we're not. Okay. All right. Fine. Fine. Let's just go ahead and make other plans. That's all right. Yeah. Go. Yep. Yep. And we started doing that, started making other plans. And, you know, sure enough, Beatrix's passport showed up within, I believe it was 4 weeks, three and a okay. half, maybe, mm-hmm. as opposed to 3 months. And I said, yeah, honey, I don't want to.
You don't want to do that.
I'm not going to say I told you so. No. But since I'm not going to tell you I told you so, let me just tell you the metric that was going on in my mind before you kind of just shut me down. Mm-hmm. The metric that was going out of my mind is this. You have a million things coming at you. You're way behind. Where do you start? Well, I suppose You start with the easy ones. You get all the easy ones done first. Mm-hmm. You literally, just any of the easy ones that come in, you turn around. Here's a 16-year-old kid, U.S. citizen, got the birth certificate, you know, has had a passport since she was 3 months old. This is a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Zero criminal record, zero, it's a kid. This is like literally stamp, send it back.
Yep.
Done. Like, and now we have one less than the 100,000 that we had before, right? That's why I knew it was going to come back quickly, because you're going to take the lowest hanging fruit, make a decision, and move the F along so that you can then free up the space and the time to focus on the things that are more difficult, right? Mm-hmm. So if we can do that with the information that's coming in with, to us, if we can do that with the news that's coming to us, with the tweets that are coming to us, with the Facebook posts that are coming to us, with the Reddits that are coming to us, with the threads that are coming to us, with the Instagram posts that are coming to us, with the email that's coming to us, with the... I mean, that's what Inbox Zero was about, right?
Yeah. It was about nuance. Oh, boy. This is where we come around to the end, where it's like the episode was going to be called Creativity or Artistry. Nah, it's just called Nuance now, because in all honesty, that's that there is, even when we look at this book, when you look at most like using nuance as your ally is going to get you a heck of a lot further. It will, I believe it'll create a more, like you said, a more positive and optimistic outlook than looking at things from this, you know, no pun intended, myopic, mm-hmm. you know, absolute view. Raise your hands, those that get your email inbox down to zero every day at the end of every, never, because you're, the deluge is constant, right? So yeah, it's fascinating. I think that if we spent more time leaning into nuance as opposed to running away from it screaming, you know, I don't even want to say productive. We'll just be far more, our relationship with time will be that much better. And we'll get, it's not just time. It's the space aspect. Minimalism is nuanced, for crying out loud. I mean, it's even, there's so many things. Enoughness. We talked about this recently.
Well, the whole reason I chose enough is because of the nuance. I didn't want to write a book called Minimalism or Death, right?
Yeah.
join
us or die.
that's not the way that life life works for most of us. I'm glad it works that way for Ryan and all the other folks, but it doesn't work that way for me, right?
No. It is fascinating. And when you look at, I think even looking at books like The War of Art and The Creative Act, A Way of Being, if anything, I think it shows you the nuance that you may be missing, you know, it can act as a reminder of it, like how nothing will ever be black and white, left or right. There will always be gray. And I think, well, and actually it's kind of suitable when you think about it. The cover of this book is very gray.
In fact, so. Oh,
well, that's it. Thanks so much for this conversation. Yeah. Again, you know, people can find you. We've got the links in the show notes. Is there anything?
I changed patrickrohn.com to be more of a landing page so that it will direct people to everywhere I am and give you a sense of all the things I do, only some of which are online. It talks about everything from, you know, my online spaces to the volunteer circus rigging I do. No, that's not a euphemism. So, little teaser here.
Sure.
I don't quite know when it's going to be officially done and out.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
But I've got a new something coming sometime soon. So I've been working on a book. I'm getting very close. You can see right next to this one is a red pen.
So you're in the editing phase.
Once I'm done with this red pen, I should have something.
So you had that to Gally that you had sent just to look to see what everything was.
Exactly. Yeah. Just so I could mark it up and make edits and corrections and things like that.
This will be a March episode, I think. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I think it's the March episode.
Oh, well, that gives me some time then. Good.
You don't have to. We've got the nice little...
March 14th is my target publication date.
There you go. There you go. Patrick, again, it's always a treat. Thanks so much for taking the time to chat with me today.
Oh, thank you, Mike. I hope you're feeling better.
Yeah, thanks. We'll see you next month.
All right. Sounds great. Take care.
There we have it. Another episode in the books, another episode in this series done. Again, if you're enjoying this series, I'd love to hear from you. Email podcast@productivityist.com and let me know what you think. Another way to let me know what you think about the podcast is to rate or review the podcast in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you are getting your podcasts. Rate, review the show. That way it makes it easier for me to understand what I can do to make the show better, but also, you know, what I'm doing well. Another thing you can do to support the show, other than subscribing, which I mentioned off the top, is to check out the sponsors you heard during our conversation today. Go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors to check that out. Show notes, by the way, if you're not looking at them wherever you get your podcasts, you can find them at productivityist.com/podcast518. That's it for this episode. We'll be back next week with another regular episode of A Productive Conversation, as regular as those episodes can be. Until then, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.